My name is Scott Lee, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Scott.
You came back. It's good to see you. Thank you. Ms. Linda and I are having a great time. Let's open with a few moments of silence and maybe ask God to join us and bless us with open hearts. Serenity prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Session 3 of the workshop, Communication with God, Ourselves, and Others. And we're going to talk a lot about sponsorship here, being sponsored and sponsoring. Thanks. That was a good reminder. Yeah, it wasn't mine. No. I walked into the old Woodbine Clubhouse. I was about 6 months sober, and I was having a discussion with another member, not being as spiritually evolved as I am. You might have thought it was an argument about something that was very important. I can't remember what it is right now. And Joe B. walked in. Joe was very intelligent. He'd been sober since Spanish-American War, and those clearly would put him on my side of this burning issue. I still can't remember what it was, and as he cleared the door, I posed this burning issue to him, and I said, what do you think? And Joe said, I am not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Do not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor oppose any causes. My primary purpose is to stay sober, help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And my opponent and I laughed pretty hard, and I think it was about 90 days later, and I had a revelation. I had my own definition. A revelation is when I figure out for myself something you've been trying to tell me for 2 months or longer. It's a revelation. Sponsors are all laughing. And I went to Joe. I said, you meant that? He said, oh, yeah. Joe was living the AA preamble. Primary means first, and it means you don't let anything get between you and whatever is first. And I think that's my lesson, is I can't let anything get between me and what's first, and that's staying sober and help others achieve sobriety. And I get to do a lot of things, and we do ask at baskets sometimes. We almost always get to, am I recovering or recovered alcoholic? Yeah, I like to answer that one. I think it must be a good thing to argue about, because I've never seen anybody argue about it except sober members of AA. And I do not wish to engage in any controversy. And stepping away from stuff like that while there's a newcomer standing outside the door trying to figure out if they're coming in or not, that's the piece that scares me. So I need something primary. And part of primary for me is that I have learned to cheer for the men I sponsor. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most important things I do. I constantly tell them how proud I am of them, what a great job they're doing, because the truth is, if they're not, I drop them. Because I'm not going to bet their lives on my ability as an amateur psychologist. I'm a one-trick pony. It's a rather fabulous trick. I just got the one. I take people through the 12 steps. That's, according to my sponsor, that's the program of recovery. I think that's what it says on page 59. Here are the steps we took, suggested as a prayer. So that's the program. And the ones that won't do that, I can't help them anyway. And the ones that do that all just blossom. I think cheering for them, it has to be genuine, is terribly important. I do that for her, too. Probably average somewhere between 5 and 15 times a day telling her how beautiful she is. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to remember. Take a look. It's not hard to remember. Another piece of that is courtesy. Are you going to talk about that?
Go for it.
Being courteous means saying thank you. And I tell this in some other workshops, but it was, you don't ever know when you're going to get one of the crash-bang lessons. And Christmas Day, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, Christmas Day, we ran out of milk. So at halftime, I raced out of the car, roared down to the convenience store, ran in the back, grabbed the milk, ran up to the counter, and I got one. And what I got was this gift, that this part of me saw a guy standing behind the counter at a convenience store on Christmas Day, working for minimum wage time and a half, maybe minimum wage double time on Christmas Day. And I opened my mouth and my heart said to him, "Man, thanks for coming to work today. Bet there was someplace you'd rather be, but you see, my family ran out of milk, and if you hadn't come into work today, we couldn't have gotten it. I appreciate you being here." And he and I both cried. I had a line of people behind me by that time. And that was where I began to get the lesson that it's important for me to be polite. When we fly, we will spend a lot of this weekend thanking the hotel employees. We're here on holiday and planning a conference. They're working on a weekend so we can do that. Mm-hmm. I will spend a lot of time thanking employees for working on the weekend so we can do this. And when we head home on Sunday, I'll thank every airline employee I can bounce off of for working on the weekend. It's an amazing thing. And sometimes it doesn't do anything, but it's always a good thing for me. Or I stop by the health food store. I get my lunch. I say, you know, "Thank you very much." I say, "Hey, back in the kitchen. Thanks for making my Big Mac and fries. You guys make a great burger, and I appreciate you very much. Thanks for making my lunch." You know, sometimes nothing for them, always something for you. Sometimes they disintegrate. I don't think I've ever been overthanked if it was genuine. Have you? No. I have to give what I'd like to have for myself. And learning to be polite and just simply say please and thank you. I don't think I have missed ever thanking Linda for doing my laundry. I don't ever miss that. Thank you for doing my laundry. I come home to clean clothes. I don't have to do that stuff. I appreciate that very much.
I know an Al-Anon laundry story.
We're not heading back for spiritual low tide again, are we?
No. This woman, before she got to Al-Anon, she just nailed all of her husband's clothes to the floor because she thought that's where he wanted them, because that's where he left them.
Not the name, so the lid shut.
The what?
So the lid shut.
Oh, yeah. And then there's another good laundry story. This lady's husband would go out and kind of party over lunch, and then his plan was to come back, and he'd very carefully take his trousers off and kind of wobble and lay them over the back of the rocking chair and then kind of rest on the couch so he could get up and go party later that night. And while he was kind of there on the couch resting, she would sew his trousers shut. And he'd get up still kind of in his drunken stupor, and he couldn't understand why he couldn't get them on, and that's how she kept him home. Oh, well.
And he'd fall back on the sofa and she'd pull the thread out.
Right, yeah.
He never did get that.
Yeah, we're very creative. We're very creative. There was this other one that was going to make sure that her husband didn't leave, and she laid down behind the car, which, you know, I thought that sounded scary too, you know. But he came out all dressed up, ready to go out for the evening, and she's with her pillow and blanket behind the car, and he goes back in, and she goes, "Ha, ha, ha, this worked." 5 minutes later, a cab showed up. You think we're not creative? I mean, you know.
A friend of mine says there's only two things an alcoholic does not like. That's the way things are and change.
Oh, yeah.
I think that might be right.
So we're communicating with others. So how do we go about this? We've just established that we're herd animals, that we obviously like to hang out together. So how do we do this without the disease? And I think the first person that I learned to communicate with was my sponsor. That was probably my first healthy relationship, okay? And the reason that was so healthy is because the woman told me the truth. And it had been a long time since I'd heard the truth. And going through the steps together, I got in touch with my truth, which meant that I could speak it. And what I discovered is when I speak my truth, and then you have a chance to respond in a truthful manner. It wasn't that every time my former husband and I would get in a geographic cure, it wasn't that every time he said, "Let's move to Dallas, it'll be better," or "Let's move to Houston, it'll be better." It wasn't that he was trying to mislead me. It was because he believed it also. Okay? But the truth was we were moving the disease as fast as we were moving the dishes and the kids. So once I've gone through the steps and could communicate or once I knew my truth. See, before I got into Al-Anon, I couldn't tell you what I liked because it wasn't safe for me to pick out what I liked. But once I got to my truth and could do that, that gave you a chance to react in a truthful manner. And my sponsor was so great. She was so truthful. I was going through my second divorce. I'd come home. The kids were at the babysitter. The dog was at the dog sitter. And our house was, it was a very long emotional and business divorce. And we had to live in this big house. And I lived upstairs and he lived downstairs. But I came home and the house was all dark. The kids were gone. I picked up the phone for a warm fuzzy from my sponsor. And I said, I just feel like I've been so rejected. And she said, you have been. And that was amazing. I can handle the truth. She trusted me to be adult enough that I could handle the truth. And that's why Scott and I have some understandings. We don't call them rules. But one of our understanding is I still have such a strong fear of abandonment. Because that's what the disease did. It took things from me. It took people, places, and things from me. So I have a terrible fear of abandonment. So when we got into our committed relationship, even before we were married, I said, I have to have an understanding. And that is that if you no longer want to be in this relationship, you will just tell me. You won't act out so I push you away. You won't act out so that I want to leave. And then once he made that commitment that he would not abandon me without telling me, he would stay in the deal, then I didn't have to think about that anymore. See, I could never be in a deal because I knew you were going to abandon me. So my deal was I'd keep my running shoes by the door because since I knew you were going to abandon me, I could always put on my running shoes. That way I could pick the time that I was going to hurt. Because I knew I was going to be in pain, that I was going to lose you and I was going to be in pain. So somehow I thought that I could control it. And as long as I kept my running shoes by the door, our chances of communicating aren't going to be very strong because I'm always got one foot out the door, and that means I'm not in the deal. So we had to come. We talked about these understandings, and that was one that I needed. Fidelity was another one that I needed.
I had one that I needed. I came home in my first marriage to two pedigreed cats. Forgive me, but to me, a cat's a complete waste of fur. And heaven knows what that cost me. I'm glad I don't know, but it was a lot of money. And I came home another time to a sports car and a payment book. And I was financially abused over and over and over again. So that's how I finally got out of the marriage, is when I realized it wouldn't matter how much money I made, I was going to die deeply in debt. And I was making good money in those days and going in the hole every year. That was the piece that finally got me out of there. And so what I needed was for us to agree on a spending limit. She and I have a number in our minds right now. It's the same number. And neither one of us will spend more than that number without consulting the other one. It doesn't mean I don't get a new sport coat when I need one. It means nobody comes home to a big surprise. And that was one of the things that I had to have. So it's important to have definition, I think, when I start communicating with others. Mm-hmm. What are we doing here? I mean, when I call one of my mentors, am I just checking in with him or do I have a question that's really troubling me? When I call my sponsor, am I just checking in or am I on fire? When one of the guys I sponsor calls me, I manage to stay pretty busy. And they're all instructed that if they need to talk, they have to drop the need word in the first two or three words when they call into me. Because I may easily say, I'll call you back and click off and not get back to them for hours. It happens. If you need to talk, I'll drop anything else. But you have to tell me immediately. So we've agreed to that. We have agreed on the definition of sponsorship on page 96. Someone who's sponsorable has read the text. They understand they're going to have to go through the 12 steps. That's what it says. Sponsor, someone who's been through the 12 steps, you give them practical advice on how to do that. So there it is. And I'm going to give them assignments. I'm going to expect to have them done in a timely manner. This is what you can expect from me. This is what I expect from you. I have an understanding with our children. We have defined these things, and it just makes it so much easier than walking around wondering.
I think it's, we learned this from a, this is the first time I've quoted Keith. Oh.
Yeah, I see some people in his workbook.
Our friend that's gone, what did y'all say, the big meeting? The first time I've quoted him, but he said he taught me this great deal. He said about the people, the others in my life, my wife, my brothers, my siblings, my children. He said, I put a job description around each of that. What is my job description? And that helped me a lot. What is my job? And it helped me about coming up with a job of sponsorship. You know, there I was sponsoring a lot of women, but what was I saying when I said yes that I was going to sponsor you? You know, with Al-Anon, I just took victims and hostages. You know, so if I was going to sponsor you, maybe that meant you were, you know, you're going to get fed three times a day and walked once, and you know, I mean, I just took you captive. So what does it mean for me to sponsor? And I had to put a mission statement and a sponsor pledge. So when a woman asked me to sponsor her, it depends on if we've had any exchange before or not, or whether or not I can. Sometimes I say, well, I need to pray about it, because sometimes I do. Sometimes I can say yes right away. But if I agree to sponsor you, and they don't know about this pledge, okay, unless they're here or hear the tape or whatever. But what am I agreeing to when I'm communicating with others? Yes, I will be your sponsor. So I call it my sponsorship pledge. In Al-Anon, the first thing that I am planning on doing is I'm going to take the women through the steps. Whether or not they've, I don't know where Polly is, but when we did this woman to woman, somebody said, when you start sponsoring somebody, even if they've been through the steps, do you take them through the steps? And in unison, she said no, and I said yes, okay? So this is all how you want to do it. But my deal is I take them through the steps because I want to get to know them. And sometimes it's pretty fast, but how do I get to know them if I don't sit down and do a fourth and fifth? So my primary responsibility is my pledge to take them through the steps. Now, in Al-Anon, and I'm just core Al-Anon, I'm kind of like Vinoy. Maybe I'm just a sour apple away from being an alcoholic because I did a lot of bonding drinking. I partied. You know, I was a drummer in a band for years, and, you know, so I've done a lot of partying, but I just don't have the knack.
You just don't have the gift.
I don't have the gift. I don't have the gift. But I choose not to drink. I honor tradition number 5 when it says we give encouragement and understanding to the alcoholic. If the drink is not so, if it's not that interesting for me, so for me to say I'm not going to drink anymore is just great. And then Scott doesn't have to kiss a glass of wine. You know, I'm an Al-Anon that doesn't drink. I choose not to drink.
See, and I'm an alcoholic and I can't choose not to drink. I have to have the spiritual help. And it is such a gift to me not to come home and kiss a glass of Chablis or a half a martini. Or that's, I cannot begin to tell you. If you're an Al-Anon, cook that. And if you're having a major problem with it, step down the hall.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So when I'm taking this Al-Anon through the steps, I ask her to sign a contract with me that during that length of time, she will not drink or drug. And because I said, I'm going to be giving you my time, and I need your energy, and I need you focused. And she'll say, well, my class reunion's coming up. And I'm going, well, that's fine. Just have a Coca-Cola. Well, my cousin's wedding's coming up, and there'll be champagne. That's fine. You can toast it with a glass of water. You know, if it's not that big a deal, you should be able to contract with me during this time we're going through the steps that you're not going to drink. And if she does keep protesting too long, I do hand her a schedule for AA meetings and say, maybe you want to check this out first. That's just what I do. Okay? So the rest of my pledge is that I will pray. At that point in time, when I become your sponsorship, I want to know the name of your husband, your kids, your dogs, because you become a part of my prayer package. I hold you lovingly with prayer against my heart all during this time that I'm sponsoring you. I also pledge to stay current in my own program. That means I go to meetings, I talk to my sponsor, and I keep my hands on all of the new literature that comes out in Al-Anon. You know, if it's new information, I need to get it so I can share it with you. So I stay current on that. I pledge that I'll be available. We travel a lot. I've got a busy life. I do the same thing. If you use the need word when you call me, I will track you down no matter where. But if you're just calling for a check-in, Scott's first sponsor, somebody ask him for his answering machine?
Yeah, that was Ice Cream Steve. His answering machine for about 2 years, you'd call in and go ring, ring, click, click. It ain't them. It ain't them. It ain't them. Leave a message. Usually didn't have to leave a message after he told me that 3 times. You know? And he finally took it off of there because too many times he had the phone. Somebody said, I didn't want to talk to you. I want to hear your message. So he finally changed it.
But somebody asked for his answering machine because it helped keep him sober.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie.
Yeah.
Ronnie, one of the first guys I sponsored, asked me when he moved out of state if he could have my answering machine because it kept him sober his first 2 years.
Yeah. So, and we have all ways to communicate with each other. But if you use the need word, then I get back right back with you. I also pledge that not to make your issues my issues. I have heard it all. I've been, I was married to a cocaine entrepreneur. I've seen a lot of stuff.
A what?
A cocaine entrepreneur. That's a drug dealer when you live in a nice neighborhood. We did. Okay. So I try to not make any, any battered wife stories, any of that. I do not make your issues my issues. I have to keep my issues, my resentments have to not be carried over to you. Your program, the going through the steps are for each individual. So I don't make my past, get tangled up with your issues. I pledge confidentiality. We have an Al-Anon phone line that comes into our house. We've got an AA phone line that comes into our house. On my message, I don't know if Scott even knows my password. We really keep that confidential. And for us, it doesn't work for me to sponsor the wife and for him to sponsor the husband. We've tried that. But for us, that just doesn't work. We'll sit down and talk to both of them. I'll share with the wife or whatever, go to meetings with her, socialize. But it just doesn't, it just hadn't worked. It just doesn't work. But I pledge confidentiality. Because only in this way can you share what is in your heart. That's what it says in our closing. I support your growth. Man, I cheer for you. I think our whole thing, the weller we get, the more we want to hang around people that cheer for us. That a girl, man, you're great. We want to hang around people that cheer for us. Why would we want to hang around people that try to put us down with negative stuff? When I live that way, and I just choose not to live that way anymore. I pledge to work the steps, and I pledge to listen. Just listen. There's an ODAT reading that says, by the time we get to Al-Anon, we are starving to be heard. And I think I thought that I was invisible, that nobody heard me. Nobody heard me, and I was invisible. So that's why that's so important. And I also thought that volume was the voice of reason. I also thought that, so that's how I got heard. So that sponsorship is how I started learning to communicate with other people, okay? It started out in a gentle way, and then I started sponsoring people. And now we get together every now and then. I get the women I sponsor together just for a giggle. And they're so shocked. They go, we're not going to read anything. We're not going to study anything, And I go, nope. We're just going to giggle. We're just going to paint toenails. We're just going to do something fun because that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, Scott does a big book study once a month upstairs at our home. And I'm just going to tell this a little part. This is truth, so this is not gossip.
It's strictly for the men I sponsor. It's
just for the men he sponsors, yes. And you've been doing it for about 4 years now?
7 and a half. Jamie was carrying the twins. Jamie was carrying the twins and on bed rest.
Well, didn't time fly? Well,
I don't get to correct her much.
When he had...
You were there.
I don't do math. So he's having this first gathering, and I'm so curious. All these guys, young guys, middle-aged guys, all these guys, I kind of know them from meetings, and they're coming to do this big book study, and it's going to be a potluck. Scott said, oh, that would be great. He said, they're all going to bring something, and we're going to have a meal. Then we're going to have this big book study. And it was upstairs, and it just seemed so great. And so that night when he got finished, I said, how was it? He said, it was great. He said, it was a lot of fun. I said, well, how was it? And he goes, it was great. We talked. And I said, so finally I realized what I was really asking. Well, how was the meal? That's what I was really curious about, you know. How was the meal? I said, well, how was the food? And he said, it was okay. He said, we had 17 desserts and a bag of carrots.
Wall Street Dan was on a diet.
So they put so much energy into this room in our house. And one time I was downstairs working with a sponsee, and I don't even hear them up there anymore, but she was right in the middle of something real serious. And then she stopped and she said, are they marching up there? And I listen, I go, no, they laugh like this. Ha, 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 ha. So I think that the gathering that we have strengthens our program. It gives us a chance to practice. It gives us a chance to be saved, to be spontaneous. Thank you. That had to...
I'm telling.
Okay. No, you
go ahead. Be spontaneous.
Be spontaneous. The end.
You notice I have permission to tell this. We were sitting in the living room one Sunday afternoon, and we got a big TV, and watching the U.S. Open golf tournament on TV. Had the sound off. I'm watching the golf tournament. Linda is sitting next to me spending time with her husband. You get that? And we're chatting, and there's this has been several years ago, and there was a Japanese fellow who was a couple of shots off the lead. He's not high on the leaderboard, and we're seeing a lot of his play. And he hits this one particularly bad shot, cost him his chance at the tournament, and they come in close on his face. You can tell he's just in pain. And Linda says, oh, I hope he doesn't commit karaoke. Well, I hope so too, honey. I've been there when they've done. Oh, boy. And you don't know how long it's going to last either. Man, that's...
So, the other way I learned to communicate with other people is I certainly learned to communicate with other people by making amends. I mean, what better way? And what I was taught, the amends process, that's for me. That's for my growth. And my sponsor was she knew this. In fact, back then when I went through the steps with her, and this is, you know, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is not conference-approved literature for Al-Anon, and that controversy has been going on for over 20 years. When I first got into Al-Anon, we didn't have a lot of our other books, and so my Al-Anon sponsor took me through the steps by using the Big Books of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? So I went through my formal amends just like that, formal. But she says... you have a tendency to pick at scabs. Ugh. She says, you're not going to make amends and have to make amends on the way you made amends. She knew me really well. And what she did is she gave me a little note card with about three sentences on it that basically said, I'm trying for a better way of life, if I've done any harm. Never to say I'm sorry. See, there were so many times I'd go directly to I'm sorry just to diffuse the situation. I would take the sorriness thinking that was going to help everybody live happily ever after. So she never allowed me to say I'm sorry. So, but I made my amends. I made a list, you know, just the list, and I followed the list. And that's how I started learning to communicate with other people, by making those amends. And I could read what was on that card, and no matter what the other person said, that's all I could do. I could say that over and over again, but I couldn't go anywhere else. I had to stick with that. And I think that God wants us to do this work, because there was a woman that I had met in early Al-Anon that she showed up on my list because I had gossiped about her. I'd criticized her. She had talked about infidelity in a meeting, and quite honestly, I wasn't in a place to hear it. So from then on, I'd say, oh, we'd go to a big meeting and we'd divide up in like three different rooms. I'd say, let's don't go in her room. I mean, I really did bash this woman with other Al-Anon members. So she showed up on my list, and I'd done all my other formal amends, but I couldn't find this woman. I didn't see her at meetings anymore. I didn't know her last name. Nobody remembered her like I did. you know. So I couldn't find her. And I tell this because I do believe that, that God does bless this work. I've got a very nice deck at my house, and I usually go out there on nice mornings. And this particular morning, I find myself sitting on my front porch, on the steps, looking out at the street. I still have my nightgown on, and I have this ODAP book right here. And I'm kind of looking through it, and I'm going, God, I can't find this woman. I'd like to get on with my step work, but I don't know what to do. And I look up, and this woman is walking down my street. I think she's a ghost that I've conjured up, you know. And I go, well, you know, here's the video. She's very well dressed in her little jogging suit going down our street. It's a little short street in this neighborhood. And I jump up, and my hair's all down, and I'm going, it's you, it's you. You know, she kind of backs up, you know. And I said, I've been looking for you to make amends. And so I made my amends, and she looks kind of funny. And I said, and I ventured out past the little note card that my sponsor had said. I said, what's going on? You have this funny look on your face. And she says, well, I'm just trying to figure out where I am. She says, I walk in this neighborhood all the time. I live about three blocks over, but I've never been down this little street before. You know, that's where we're supposed to do this work. And so then in getting to communicate with others by doing this work, I was going through the steps several years later, and I realized that there were some amends that I needed to do, some additional amends I needed to do. And they are what I call good amends. There was a woman in my high school that was a teacher that got me off the back row and probably prevented a teenage suicide, because she saw something in me that was desperate, and she got me active in high school activity. And I started making a list of the people that were important to me that I'd never stopped to say thank you. And I tracked them down with the same diligence, with the same determination that I did the other people on my list. And I said, I need to make amends. I never just said thank you for being the fantastic person that you are. And that was a healing for me. Making good amends is a healing for me. And that's one of the ways that I communicate with other people.
I learned that from her, and I went back and thanked my mother. I went back and thanked my major professor in college. I went back and thanked the man that taught me to fly first. Mm-hmm. You know, I think all the times about my sins of commission, the things I did that harmed people. It never occurred to me that I'd failed to do things and that had harmed also. And what a glorious experience it was. Mm-hmm. And if you're new, I hope you can hear what I'm about to say, because I know your head's busy. See if you can get it turned down for just a second. The two hardest things in Alcoholics Anonymous are thinking about doing a fourth step and thinking about doing a ninth step. Actually doing those steps is nowhere near as difficult as thinking about doing them. So if you will stop thinking about doing them, you will have wiped out the two hardest things that you face in your recovery. And there's another piece in step 9, too. And this is a principle that I've stumbled across. And that's never mess up an amend with an excuse. Mm. The first time I give you an excuse for why I did something to you, I take all the power away from the amend. I, too, limit the men I sponsor from using the word sorry. They don't believe that anymore. I believe I've harmed you. It is a good way to go.
And I remember hearing a speaker one time that says amend is a nautical term. It really just means change directions or amend your course. So you share with this person that you are changing your lifestyle. You're going to amend the way. And Scott and I are in agreement on about living amends. Maybe this is a time to do that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does that make that my turn? Yeah, okay.
No.
That's what it's like at home, too, you know. I walked out of a meeting one time, and a fellow whose sponsor I sponsor stopped me and said, I disagree with something you said in the meeting. And what I had said was that my amends to my children would never be complete. And he said, that's not right. He said, did you go to your children and tell them what you thought you had done wrong? Did you ask them how you could repair the damage? Did they tell you? Did you do it? Did you ask for their forgiveness? Did they give it? I said yes to all of that. He said, the fact that you're trying to be the best father you can be today is not ninth step work. It's 12th. It's the principles in all your affairs. And if you think it's night step work, you have not accepted their forgiveness or God's or your own, and you have work to do. I believe he was right, and I don't find the term living amends in the text. And if your sponsor's got you making them, it suits me fine. I'm going to tell you, I came down off the cross that day. My amends are complete. I'm trying to be the best dad I can be today. It's 12-step work. And the gift on that is that I've seen a lot of teenage and older children manipulate us into some very sick behaviors under the banner of you were a lousy parent in the past.
When you were drinking.
And when I start letting them do things that are out of bounds because of old guilt, I'm being a lousy parent now. That's just my take on it. And if your sponsor disagrees, I agree with your sponsor in your case.
You know, I'm so blessed that my oldest daughter is 19 years sober. You know, I have to say that AA parented her so beautifully. Unbelievable. But she's 21, sober, college grad, has come back home, and she's not really looking for a job, but she's sober, so I'm so happy about that. I've been in Al-Anon a couple of years. And then the kids of her, you know, generation getting sober, they would go to a meeting, they'd drink a lot of coffee, and then they'd come back to my house and they'd play cards all night. And I'd hear them up there and I'd go, isn't that wonderful? I know where my daughter is. Isn't that wonderful? They know where our children are getting sober. That went on for several months, and then I'm going, then they'd sleep all day. And then they'd start the pattern again, you know. And it dawned on me, here's a newly sober woman, a college grad, and something's not right about this. So as she came down the stairs that day, I handed her part of the phone bill, her part of the electric bill, her part of the water bill. And she looked at it, and she goes, oh. And then she went out and started looking for a job, like the next day. And what she says later is, she says, Mom, the day you treated me like an adult was the day I believed I could be one. You know, and if you want to know how to treat adults in your life, get this little pamphlet called Attachment. It's unbelievable. It says it's not kind or unkind, but it has things like not to suffer because the actions or reactions of other people, not to allow ourselves to be used or abused by others in the interest of another's recovery. I'm really big on that one. The AA guy is newly sober. His wife is newly in Al-Anon, and they've got three kids at home. And he's out the door every night because he has to go to his meeting. Well, guess what? She needs to go to her meeting, too. Not to be used or abused for the sake of somebody else's recovery. They need to work something out. They need to communicate about that. Not to do for others what they can do for themselves. Not to manipulate situations so others will eat, go to bed, get up, pay bills, not drink. Not to cover up for another's mistakes or misdeeds. Not to create a crisis. Not to prevent a crisis if it is the natural course of events. Therein lies adults living happily ever after with detachment. I sometimes have my sponsees picture a hula hoop around them. And I say, take care what's inside your hula hoop, and you're going to be okay. So that's how I help get along with others. Also, I believe in, you seem to be looking for something, so I'll keep on talking. We talked about the job descriptions. I believe in family sit-downs. I watch The Sopranos. They do sit-downs, okay? So I believe in family meetings. You come together for unity. Our first tradition says unity. And you come together and you either discuss a topic, like who's going to carry out the trash this next week, and all of the children, all of the adults that live in the household participate. And everybody has a voice. Now, and not everybody has vote, though. Like the kids say, I think I should miss school and we should go to Disneyland next week, okay? They get a chance to say that, but you don't have to finance it just because they say it. I think another thing is to talk about the traditions. Have a family sit down once a week and say, what worked this week? What didn't work this week? And then maybe take and read the readings around a step or the traditions. I don't care which program you're in, if you get your hands on the Alateen literature, the message is so clear, the language is so simple, and take that little pop quiz, you know, is Alateen for you? As an adult, that's what let me know what was going on when I was in junior high school. That's why when I was at school, I was worrying about what was happening at home. When I was home, I was trying to figure out a way to get out of there. In fact, I think that was one of the reasons I got married so young, because back then I didn't see another way to get out of that household. So I believe in family sit-downs. I believe in putting together a shared vision. You know, our meetings have a group conscience and have a shared meeting. We say we're going to use this part of our budget for buying literature. We've got to pay the rent. They have a business meeting. Households and individuals and coupleship, your sponsorships, everything should be run like that. You have to have a shared vision. If you don't have a shared vision, then, there's a song from South Pacific. If you don't have a dream, how are you going to make a dream come true? So if you don't have a shared vision, Scott and I have a shared vision, and I often say it's like railroad tracks. And really, anybody that I have a shared vision with, a sponsee, my adult children, whatever it is. And our shared vision is out there in the future, and we're like separate railroad
rails.
You know, that the metal part, the rails. And I grew up in flat West Texas. You could probably do it here in Florida, too. If you stand in the middle of a railroad track, it looks like those two rails come together. But it's an optical illusion, because if you walk down the railroad track, that point of connecting moves further down. But that point of connecting is your shared vision. And what I've observed with the people I sponsor, with Scott, with family members, it seems like the closer that the God of our understanding, if we could write down the same description on a piece of paper, the closer we get to that shared vision, okay? So we're the separate rails, and then the ties, the wooden part, that's what keeps us connected together. You know, holidays, hobbies, going to meetings, all of that. And if you take all of your relationships, you know, I just used to just Velcro to anybody that came within 3 feet of me. You know, everybody became my new best friend. I told her my whole life story. You know, no sense of confidentiality or you know, it was all just whining and pitiful. And now I am an individual and you are an individual. And I can respect you. And one thing that comes out of that, this is what I believe comes out of communicating with others, and that is the gift of silence. You know, when I was early in recovery, when nobody would speak at a meeting, I'd get so antsy. And now I just use it as a chance to just absorb. I mean, it's amazing. You know, non-recovery is noisy, you know. I mean, you know, lamps hitting the wall and dishes hitting the floor. I mean, you know, that stuff is pretty noisy. And, you know, and silent anger is noisy and very scary, okay? So to get around other people and for let it to be silent is a real gift. And that's just called companion silence. That we're just sitting there and we're just experiencing this moment together without anything interfering, like words. It's a pretty neat thing to put out there as a shared vision.
There's another, I think, principle that underlies some of what we're talking about now, and that's that on a spiritual plane, anything that's right for one individual involved is also right for all of the others involved.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not like it, but it's right for them. I stopped financing the party for my daughter. Did she like it? No. Ask her today. She'll tell you it was the right thing. If I'm still hung up thinking I'm making living amends to her, I could have kept her sick a long time. I'll talk a little. We're going to bounce around. I haven't been feeling well for several days, and I didn't get my notes as organized as I wanted to. I find three basic descriptions of the alcoholic in the text. They're all over the place. Well, two of them are. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Or if when drinking you have little control of the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. That's me. I'm probably alcoholic. And they discuss that one in a lot of places. But there's another one that's only really mentioned clearly once, and it's on page 23. And it says, once in a while he may tell the truth. And that's my history. I didn't spread the truth around too thick. I saved it kind of for emergencies. And so one of the things I'm always eager to look for in some new guy that I sponsor is for him to call me up and tell me he lied to me. And he says, I told you I went to 7 meetings last week and I only went to 5. And I say, wow, congratulations. Isn't that fantastic? Look how much you have grown. You used to lie for credit when you could have got cash for the truth. And here you are, not able to live with that little lie. Look how much you have grown. Isn't that fantastic? I am so excited for you. It does two things. The first one is it gives me a chance to cheer for him, and it's true. The second thing is I knew he was going to lie to me the day before I met him. That's what they do. How many meetings he went to last week didn't affect me at all. And the other thing it does is it wipes out of his mind forever the phrase, no reason to call Scott, I know what he's going to say. He never thinks that again because he had no idea I was going to do that. So I like to keep him just a little bit off balance, and I think that's an excellent way to do it. I thought for the longest time that my first responsibility to the men that I sponsor was to take them through the steps, and I believe that's second. I think my first responsibility is to love them. And I have a gift. I love them all. I'm told that God is love, and when I give love, I give God. It is the highest gift. I must begin there. And then I can love them through these 12 steps. I don't believe in tough love. I can't see it anywhere in spiritual literature. When I have to tell somebody something that they're not going to like, it breaks my heart. I don't need to be rough on anybody. If he can't let me help him, I understand. My Uncle Frank used to say some people are just naturally hard to help. If he's going to be one of those, I probably can't help him anyway. I got to let him go. I don't ever do it angrily. I don't remember the last time I got angry at somebody I sponsored. I don't know that I've ever done that. It's just not part of, that doesn't help their recovery. And the question always has to be, what does he need? I need to get what I need to get somewhere else. I don't need to get it from him. Linda and I, by the way, have permission to tell you whatever stories we tell you from up here, and I have permission to tell this little beauty. So there are several people in the room that know a member of my home group we call Hippie James. Yeah, they're laughing. The hipster is 22 years old. He's sober 5 years, but he's a hippie that's born 3 generations too late. And we say that in front of him. Or I wouldn't be saying it here. And I have his permission to tell this. But he claims that there's a band called Fish that spells it funny. And I'll be 65 next month. I'm willing to take his word for it. I don't need anything else. And they were going to have their last concert. And I told him it was their first last concert because I've been watching this for a while. But anyway, they're going to have their last concert in Vermont, I believe it was. And he wanted to go. Nobody wanted to go with him. So he hops in the hippie mobile in Nashville and he drives like 32 hours to Vermont. Straight through to discover that the car line to get into the parking area or the camping area is another 10 hours. And he's going to sleep behind the wheel, which is not a major problem in a parked vehicle. The problem is that people are passing him. So he gets out of the hippie mobile, he pops the trunk, he pulls out the Coleman stove, he sets it up on the trunk of the hippie mobile, fires it up. If you ever saw the hippie mobile, that wouldn't bother you either. And he starts making soup and coffee. And he starts talking to the people in the cars around him and sharing soup and coffee. Because he said it occurred to him that if he were going to remain physically awake, he's going to have to stay physically active. And then he said, and if I'm going to stay spiritually awake, I'm going to have to stay spiritually active. Powerful stuff. This is page 156 talking about Bob and Bill. Both saw that they must keep spiritually active. That's really what we're talking about. We're talking about a one day at a time program of things to keep me spiritually active. My spiritual bucket leaks, and I have to continue to fill it with the things that y'all have taught me to do. One of the things we started doing, I guess about a decade ago now, it occurred to me when I had 100 days sober, I had a good 100 men's phone numbers in my pocket. You know how many I dialed, don't you? You bet. Same number as everybody else. And just occurred to me that handing the new guy my phone number made me feel good, but it wasn't doing any good. And so I stopped it, and I asked the men that I sponsor to stop it. And what we do now is we exchange phone numbers with new men. And we take responsibility for calling them twice in the next 3 days. That's all. We don't chase them. Just a phone call. Hey, this is Scott. I met you at the back room yesterday. I talk to 5 guys every day that are in recovery. You're on today's list. How's it going? I'm going to the Nolensville Road meeting tonight, 8 o'clock, Presbyterian Church. Meet me there. Well, you know, we'll have a soft drink. I got a CD you might enjoy. It's nothing for me to call him. He can't call me. They're dying. This thing about the hand of AA always being there. What would happen if we could reach it out just a little further? They're dying. Boy, do we have a history of the sober alcoholic reaching out to the new one. Roland Hazard got saved from going. Carl Jung got him sober. He goes and keeps Ebby Thatcher from being put away for alcoholic insanity. He takes a friend with him who just happens to be the judge's son. I just found that out. And they give him Ebby. Ebby gets 90 days and calls Bill. Bill was 6 months in Akron in big trouble. Makes the call that leads him to Bill, to Bob. It's not like we don't have a history of that. Right? That's pretty solid precedent. Let's reach it out a little bit further. That's what we're looking for. That's part of how I stay spiritually active. I do not give new men my number. I exchange with them. And I make me call and I require of the men I sponsor. If he can't call a new guy, I've got time to talk. I can't help him. Can't help him because this is about getting out of me. You know, the easiest men in AA to sponsor are, I'll tell you who they are. They're guys sponsoring a newcomer themselves. Their issues vanish. Same day, they just evaporate. And they go from calling you every 24 hours with the emergency du jour to calling twice a week, once with a question about sponsorship, and once with something absolutely hilarious this rookie has either said or done. Is that not your history? That's what I see. Go ahead. You got something?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Like Scott said, all the stories we tell, we have permission, and this is one of my favorite about communication. True story. This couple lived in Georgia, and Christmas was coming up, and this is before they were in AA and Al-Anon, okay? And they were both heading toward their bottom, so you can imagine what their household looked like. You know, we can remember those days right before we walked into the grace of these rooms. But Christmas was coming up, and she had found the perfect Christmas present for her husband, and she was so excited. She knew that this present was going to cure all of their problems. So she wrapped it up and she put it under the tree. And about 3 days later, her present from him shows up under the tree. And she's amazed. It looks exactly the same size. She picked it up and it was the same weight. And she had given him what she knew was the perfect Christmas present. And now she is amazed because she knows that he has given her the exact same thing. She is so convinced of this. She says in her little Georgian tone, she says, "Well, let's just open the presents at the same time." So Sunday morning, they ripped the paper off. She had given him a very nice hardback copy of the Bible. He had given her The Joys of Sex. But she was convinced that they were communicating, okay? So we just never know what it's going to look like. And another true story, this happened out west, and there was a small meeting, and a newcomer came in, and oh my goodness, she was gorgeous. I mean, she was blonde and just gorgeous and well-dressed, and she came into this meeting, and it was a small meeting, so everybody knew everybody else. They knew she was a newcomer. You know, we know that. We've seen each other before, but they don't know that we know that. They're the newcomer. So she comes in. She sits through the whole meeting, and she doesn't ask a question. She doesn't nod. She doesn't cry. She just listens, and in all of her wonderful calmness, it looked like, and beauty and all this kind of stuff. And then after the meeting, you know, people went rushing over to her and wanted to give her some pamphlets and wanted to give her a schedule. And somebody asked her, said, "Do you have any questions?" And she said, "Yes, I do." She said, "In the closing, it says, 'Whatever your problem, there are those among us who've had them too.'" If you go to an Al-Anon meeting, that's part of the closing. They read it almost at all the meetings. "Whatever your problem, there are those among us that have had it too. Reason things out and talk to each other." So we're going, yeah, we've all had problems, you know, divorce, marriages, birth of babies, death, you know, going back out. You know, we're thinking of all of our experience. Yeah, we've all had them too. She says, "Well, I have a problem, and I don't know what to do with it." And we go, "Well, what is it?" And she said, "Well, My husband is in treatment, and 2 days ago, his prized bull was struck by lightning and is laying dead in the field, and I don't know what to do about it. None of us had ever had that problem. None of us. And but we're creative. We said, well, have a barbecue. You know, we don't know. We don't know what to do with this big prize bull. But the thing about communication, we kept talking long enough. And I think this is it. You have to keep talking long enough till you get to what you're really talking about. And what she was really saying is, my husband's in treatment. His prize bull got killed by lightning. He's going to get out. And guess what? I'm going to get blamed for it. That's what she was really asking. And how many times we've been in that same situation, okay? So I think that, you know, Scott and I don't really have fights. We have arguments. We have a plan to take him in front of our wonderful gifted therapist. And maybe not the last time, but the time before last, we took one to her. And she starts holding a paper up in front of her face. And I said, what's going on with you? And she was laughing. She said, get out of here. She said, y'all just had a little spat. And we look at each other and we go, we had a spat. Not that we don't get out of sync, okay? It was a wonderful Al-Anon Blanche. She died several years ago, but I used to just get so overwhelmed coming to these conferences and hanging out with the AA energy. Scott even said he just keeps going on and on until he gets sick, okay? He just pushes and goes, and it's all good, okay? This is all good. There's nothing in his life for me to complain about. It's all good. But and I told Blanche, I said, I just get so overwhelmed with this energy sometimes. And she said, this is my observation. She said, the AAs just get out there and they go and they go and they do till they cannot go any further. They completely run out of steam. Then they've got to go back to the cave to charge the batteries. She said, the Al-Anons have to stay in the cave, you know, doing the push-ups, getting ready before they can go out there. Okay? Our communication works. We are out there at the same time and in the cave at the same time, and it works really well. Doesn't matter what the reasons are. Okay? But we do have to talk long enough to find out what we are what's upsetting us.
That morning after thing is a good example of that.
That morning after is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to keep talking about what was really going on.
And thank you to the ladies that thanked me for that. That's an important one, guys.
Mm-hmm. I know one time we were going to go back to my old stomping grounds in West Texas. We'd been married about 6 years when we were invited to go speak at that conference. Mm-hmm. And we're on the airplane. I'm kind of excited. We're going back to Odessa, Midland. And then I get kind of antsy on the airplane because I thought, I'm going to be introducing Scott to some of my old friends, you know, some family perhaps or whatever. And, you know, this is where I married my first husband. I've got a lot of history here. So finally I said, I've got to ask you about something. And he said, okay. I said, look, if I get out there and I call you by the wrong husband's name, don't take it personally. And his face went, it's like he'd been holding his breath for 6 years. He went, whew. Because he came out of a 26-year-old marriage, and he said you were on orange alert all the time.
Yeah, I lived in fear that I was going to call her by the wrong name.
So what,
all we had to do was talk about it.
Yeah, just all we had simple. To do was talk about
just
it.
Just
yeah.
That simple.
And another time that we communicate with each other is by kind of picking up on the vibes of where you really are. And I'm thinking about the time that we were going to go on a holiday.
Let me tell that.
Okay, you tell that.
I had worked like an 18-day week in my summers. I worked a lot of trade shows, and I'd set up on Friday, work the show Saturday and Sunday, go on the road Monday. And I'd done that multiple weeks in a row. And then we had a 4-day trip to Florida, which is an 8-hour drive from Nashville to the Redneck Riviera, you know, the Panhandle. And we had a place over there. And we're going to be down on Thursday and back on Sunday. And I was just ragged. And we're going to bed on Thursday night. I think we had packed, or Wednesday night, we had packed the car.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda said, what if we don't go? And I haven't told you this, but that, I thought, holy mackerel. But I said, what do you mean, don't go on our vacation? And she said, why don't we just stay here in Nashville? And we'll pick up 2 full days. We've already told everybody we're not going to be in town. All the sponsees, all the family, don't expect to see us.
Mm-hmm.
We can do what we do on vacation. We go to meetings we don't normally go to. Go to movies, sleep late, eat in restaurants. We pick up 2 full days. And what a gift. There's a piece of anonymity that I don't think we talk about enough. There are 2 pieces, really. According to Dr. Bob and the good old timer, somewhere in the 260 to 270 neighborhood, Dr. Bob said failure to give my last name in an AA meeting is in conflict with our tradition of anonymity, that we are not a secret society. There are people, I've been in meetings with federal judges, there are people that do need to remain anonymous in the fellowship. I'm not talking about that. But by and large, we need to be able to find each other. This anonymity thing is at the public level. My name is Scott Liam in the Nashville phone book. The new people need to know how to find me. I mean, so you walk into the hospital, you're a member of your home group. Pardon me, ma'am, can you tell us what room Janet from another planet's in? Well, or Chainsaw Mike over the, I mean, they. So we need to be able to find each other. But the other piece is what that story was about, and that's anonymous giving. That's where you give somebody something and you don't get caught. And it's a powerful, powerful thing, and that's what she was doing there. And I get to do that every once in a while for her, but she does it great. I'll tell you a couple of fun ones. Don't take the close-in parking place. Drive by it and let somebody you'll never see or meet find a really good parking place.
Thank you. I take the good one.
Yeah. You know, if you find a penny heads up, it's a lucky penny, you pick it up. What do you do with the tails? Bend over and turn it over and leave it for somebody else to find. Right? Pardon? I'm not going to tell you all of them. I think I can. I ask God in my morning prayers to help me not miss a single chance to be of service today. And I try to hold that. I try to stay in touch with that all day long. And
Well, I have one if you want to kind of take a break of spontaneous giving.
Yeah, we're going to go about another 10 minutes in because the smokers will be vibrating at about another 6. And then we'll be gone in about 10.
Okay, so this was another time we were heading down, and I just tell this because if we try to communicate with others, it really can be a lot of fun. We were going down to that house in Florida, and we'd started out. My daughter had given me a canoe, yard art, for my birthday. And we were taking it down to the Florida house, and we were in the pickup truck, and then it started raining. And the canoe would slip back. And so every time it would get too far back, my job was to tell Scott when it got to a certain point, and he'd have to pull off the highway, get out of the truck, push the canoe back up, get back in, white knuckle some more driving, and I'm over there going, oh, I wish it wouldn't slide, I wish it wouldn't slide, and it slides, and then I said, Scott, I've got to tell you, he's angry, out of the truck, pushing it up, in the rain, slamming the door, white knuckling it, and this goes on for several miles. It's now very late, and we're tired, and there's that silent anger in the truck. And I had the thought, I don't live this way anymore. I don't do this. This is not serenity. And I said, you know, God, I need a little help here. And I said, would you like to play recovery trivia? And he said,
what's that?
That's exactly what he said. And I said, well, I don't know, but I think it goes like this. I'll say a phrase, and you say a phrase. Like I say, easy does it, and you say one day at a time. I say, call your sponsor. You say, eatin' meetin'. And so we started playing this game of just spitting out these slogans as fast as we could. We started laughing. A little while later, I'd say, oh, it slid back again. Okay, he'd pull over. He'd say, now just wait a minute, I've got another one. And he'd get out of the truck, and he'd jump back in. The only thing that had changed was our communicating. That's all that had changed, you know, and it's really kind of fun.
Classic example of giving.
Of giving,
I got here as a taker. Been a taker all my life. And I thought I would have to transition from taker to giver. Not possible. And it's because a taker can't take anything worth having. And this is red flags. It's just my experience. It was necessary for me to transition from taker to receiver. The difference is that a receiver acknowledges that someone else gave. They say thank you. They ask for some more. It contains humility. Having received for a while, and I'm riding the shoulders of some of the giants, I can then go to giver. And I thought for a while that it would then be my willingness to give that would keep the channel between me and God open. And I think it is important. The piece that keeps the channel open is my continuing willingness to receive, because that contains humility. It's my experience that when you're hurting and you let me know and I get to love on you, I get this wonderful closeness to God by giving. When I'm hurting and I don't let you know, I block your chance to get close to God by giving. And I think we lose more people with 10 years and up from that than anything else. And they're saying, you know, my fanny shattered all over the floor and I don't need to go take it down and let people, because the newcomers don't need to see that. I couldn't disagree more. That's exactly what they need to see. They need to see that the two most important things I take to my home group are my mistakes and my pain. It makes it okay for people who respect me to be real. And that's what we better learn to be, because that fake it thing don't work. If that worked, none of us would be sitting here.
And I think the other thing we agree on, that in our area, we have a slogan that say, take your problems to your sponsor and your solutions to meetings.
Yeah.
So you can take your pain and your wherever you are. You don't have to be unreal, but take your solutions to the meeting.
Yeah, I'm not saying go dump on the group, but I've got to let you know. Because it's a very selfish thing to not do that. And I hope I'm always a newcomer. I hope I can always hear it. I had 10 years when a guy with 6 months showed me this on page 85. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense of the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, vital meaning necessary to life. Sixth sense. And he stopped and said, I believe if I'm still focusing my other five senses on getting my will done, I will not develop the vital sixth sense. I hope I can always hear the newcomers. They've got something for me. We're going to take 21 minutes and 10 seconds. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I can tell them about their gift over there.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell them later.
I've got some more pretty good stuff, and I've got the boy fishing.
I'm kind of wrapped up.
Yeah. Have I got fever, or is it just hot? Is it hot up here?